Hi there, friends. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. For the past few days, I've been talking about a concept called Gestalt therapy, the perception of which focuses on many of the defenses that people have. And what's a defense? A defense is something that helps you not face reality. Reality. Tough stuff, reality. So I was going to bring you more of that today, but I wanted to show you something because much more important than anything that we have to say here on The Positive Mind is what's taking place in Haiti right now and the devastation. And here's the question that you must all ask yourself. How do you deal with it? How do you deal with it? Let's talk about devastation. If I were to talk to the average person about what would devastate you more than anything in the world, almost each person would say the death of a child. Or certainly any parent would say the death of a child. But if you talk about devastation, you also talk about things like the sudden ending of a relationship, finding out that your husband or wife is cheating, being fired from a job, having a good friend die, betrayals. People talk about those as devastating, and certainly in some cases, something could happen to someone that is so big that they just feel like they can't go on. So here's a question. What's it like if you're suddenly confronted with the loss of your family and terror and horror and broken bones and so many thousands of people killed? How do they do it? How do people survive? What is the mechanism by which they survive? Well, you say they go pray. Yes, by the way, Haitians love to pray. They pray a great deal. I've heard many prayers. When I've been in Haiti, I've heard prayers to, you know, saying that everything bad that ever happens to us is a result of our sins, and that God is punishing us for our sins, and this is just a prayer to God. And there's a lot of praying that goes on. Is that one way to deal with it? Is that the cause of it? No, no, no. How do you survive? How do you get through? Over the next few days, you're going to be reading about people who seem heroic in the way that they could step up when necessary. But what is it about us that helps us survive such devastation? How do we get through it? What's the idea? Wouldn't it be nice to just quit? How many people do you know that's been devastated by illness? Let's say they get something like cancer. And they say, let me die. Let me go. What is it about the human spirit? Do you think everybody who decides to fight for their survival is somebody who has got some greater goal in mind, like I've got to stay alive for my children? No. No. So today I want to focus on the mechanism of survival, surviving devastation, with all due respect to all of the tragedy that's going on. I am certainly not trying to pathologize it. But I want to show you something about how people get through. I mean, how does the average anything, being on this planet, get through? What is this life struggle about? What is it that you could take something and beat it and knock it down and starve it and do whatever, and it gets up and it fights for life? Where is this fight for life force coming from? Well, it seems that in our DNA, in the very structure of our being, we have something that says for as long as there's a breath of life, you must fight for it. There is something inside us that says never quit. Now, why would that be there? It would be there for the survival of the species. Because if we wanted to, if we had people who were quitting and letting themselves die, let's say you believed in some great hereafter, you just let yourself go. But no, there is something inside each human that says fight and struggle. Fight and struggle. And each one of you deal with this all the time. Sometimes you get tired of fighting and struggle. Certainly never a fight or a struggle like we're seeing taking place in Haiti. But let's talk about first thing called the acute stress reaction. The sign of it. They're very different, but it looks like a daze. You see a daze with some constriction of the field of consciousness, narrowing of attention, inability to really comprehend stimulation, and disorientation. This is what happens the minute that tragedy, trauma, will hit the average person. Now, of course, there are different kinds of people. People respond differently. If you're a very nervous kind of person, and something happens, you're almost jumping ahead of it before it happens. You're moving real quickly. Like we saw at the tsunami, some of the animals that rushed to the top of the mountains, they were more of the nervous type. You know, the birds, those kind of things were kind of taken off real quick. Whereas if you're a slower kind of person, a person who is dedicated to peace, a person who is dedicated to a slower way of life, you're going to be slower to respond. So each culture will have a different kind of response according to the nature of the culture itself. But the signs of it, the symptoms of it, are the same. And here's what we do. Now, yesterday we were talking about defenses. Detachment. That's one of the things that help you get through detachment. How do you detach? You detach by feeling like you're not connected to it, like you're walking with it, but it's not really you. You don't feel very emotional about it. You're just getting through. You detach yourself. How many of you detach yourself? You know what that's like? You look at something, you could see somebody crying and not feel anything. Just let's get going. Let's do what we have to do. Detachment. You're in a fire. Let's just get to the door. Yeah, I know you're burned, but let's keep on going. You can't afford to feel anything. Detachment. Detachment. Common thing that people do. Derealization is another thing that people do. Now, this may have happened to you. You derealize, which is when you kind of believe you're in an altered state of consciousness, like the world's not real or you're not real, but there's a distance between you and reality. There's depersonalization, which is like not being there. You remove yourself from it. You often wonder how people survive tortures. You know, we heard about many of the tortures that were done by our government, by our people. How does somebody survive torture? They depersonalize. They separate themselves from their body. You're now killing their body, but you're no longer killing them. And they somehow get through by separating themselves from their body. Many people who are tortured, even as children who are beaten, often do this. They depersonalize. They remove themselves. So these are the kind of things that are the reactions that people take. I wanted to take you a little deeper into it. Let's say you're in the middle of a traumatic event, and as many people are right now, there's a subjective sense of numbing. And it could be like if you look at some of the people who you'll see, and you'll see the pictures of them, there are many people crying, and then there are people who just look blank-eyed, you know? And that's numbing, the kind of a numbing that you go through. Now, why did nature give us numbing? Well, nature did this very interesting thing to people about your wounds. You know, if you're an animal and you're in the jungle, as many of us are, we are our own animal selves. And if you hurt your arm, but you still have to get through the jungle, you can't afford to pay attention to your arm because you still have to fight. You have to use the other arm, and you can't let anybody know how much pain you have. Because if you start crying and moaning, they're going to come over and eat you up. So the idea of being able to detach yourself from the thing, being able to detach yourself from your wound becomes a very important thing. You separate yourself from your pain. Now, many of us do that on a smaller level. We do it with emotional relationships. You have pain in a relationship and you separate yourself. You make yourself not feel it. Or you have physical pain and you make yourself not feel it. Very often with disaster, that's what you do. So if you look at the photographs of the faces of the people who are going through this, some people look like they have a blank stare. They're kind of removed from it. They're functioning, but removed from it. It doesn't mean they're cold. It means that they are surviving. It doesn't mean that they're not feeling. It's that they're feeling so much that they switched off. It may be the only way to get through. There's a thing called dissociative amnesia, which is, in a way, you don't even remember that this is taking place from moment to moment. You remove yourself and you don't even know that this is taking place. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're talking about understanding how people can go through the number of traumatic incidences, traumas, disasters that they have done, for example, in Haiti, and still somehow garner an energy for life. How do you do it? Do we use tricks? You know, religion is one of the things that were given to people to help deal with devastation. Believe in a higher power. Believe that the source of this is outside of you and unexplainable. It helps. That's what people do. A lot of people turn to religion at this time. They were talking, one of the reports I read, they were talking about finding so many people in the streets of Haiti praying, singing prayer songs to get through. What does that do? It gives you a sense of union with other people. It connects you to a bigger power. It removes you from yourself, and it gives you hope. Whether there's any reality to it or not. We have other mechanisms in our minds that are ways that we deal with these things. You know, I just wanted to mention three. Deja vu. You know what deja vu is? When you have, you feel like you've seen something before, even though it's taking place now, and you believe that you've seen it before, you've known it. Like people will have a dream of, let's say you get a car accident, and while you're in the car accident, you remember having imagined that you were going to be in a car accident. Deja vu, a very interesting trick of the mind. What the mind does is it actually gaps in space. You may not have thought of it before, but when it happens, your mind goes back and makes you believe that you thought about it before, and it's a deja vu experience. It's a very interesting trick, a little gap in the time sequence of the brain. There's another thing called jamais vu. Jamais vu is where you have the situation and feel like you're in the situation before. How does jamais vu work? You feel like you're in it again. That's right. You're having a situation and you feel like you've been in the situation before. Not that you've predicted it, but you've actually been there before. Then there's a thing called Prescavue, Prescue, which is almost quite remembering something that's taking place and saying to yourself, I don't exactly have the details, but I could almost remember having been here. These are the amazing defenses of the human mind. The human mind, the human body, how we get through, detachment being probably the one that we're seeing the most. In general, our society has a way of protecting its citizens. There are so many traumas. You know, before yesterday, before Tuesday, the average number of people who die from earthquakes are about 10,000 a year. That number certainly is going to change. Because people can get through it one way or another, but when you have things like conditions like in Haiti, where you don't have the structures and you don't have all of the other stuff that's there, and a country that's been pounded over and over again by tragedy upon tragedy, as well as misuse upon misuse, you just don't have anything to stand up with. Yet you watch them get through. You watch these people fight for survival, carrying the bodies of their children. Armand DeMille with you. I want to understand it. I really want to understand it. I want to understand feeling helpless against a dire threat and how it happens. And all I know is that people have mechanisms being able to do it. There are people who have mechanisms that help them get through whatever it is you have to get through when you have to get through it. According to how some people believe that if you dissociate, if you disconnect completely while you are going through it, which is what some people do, that there's going to be a consequence to pay later. And the consequence is you're going to have what they call post-traumatic stress disorder, meaning it's going to linger around. Other people believe that it's all you can do. It's all you can do is separate yourself. The brain, when the brain is traumatized, a lot of things happen. And one of the things that happen is our chemistry change. The overall effect is that we have a kind of biological stress response. Cortisol, increased secretion of neurotransmitters such as norepinephrine, it makes people more reactive to arousing stimulus. So by secreting more neurotransmitters, you can now deal more with the pressure. So you go on edge. But being on edge is not psychological. It's a physiological, psychological phenomena. You're now ready to deal with the next thing. You know how many tremors they had to deal with after the initial earthquake? So that every time the ground shook, you had to wonder whether or not it's going to happen again. Terrified, terrified people since last Tuesday. Terrified people. But terrified and still struggling through. And it's the human capacity to do this. And then at the same time, while I have people who have family in Haiti who will be calling me about that, I'll have somebody else who's calling me about a fight with their boyfriend and telling me how traumatized she is and feels suicidal. Or a man who's calling me and saying she won't speak to me and I can't handle myself. Now, does this minimize each person's experience? Everybody feels a kind of a panic about it. A young woman I know who wakes in the middle of the night in terror every night because her brain goes off. And she feels like somebody that she's committed some great sin and has to confess it and has to do stuff about it. Is her terror any less than the terror of anyone else? Well, if you look at it objectively from a distance, of course. Of course, you know, what are you doing complaining about it? You know, think about what's happening over there. But the mind is a place that has, that's amazing. Humans are amazing. Amazing. So I don't know how it's touched you, my friends. You, my friends who have been listening to this. I know the efforts and the feeling about it and the criticisms we must feel. Certainly we could all stand on a soapbox and preach about what should have been done and the structures, and I've even known people who said, get all the people out of Haiti. They don't belong there. The island is something wrong with it, you know. Maybe it's just been raped to death. Maybe it's just been misused. There are all kinds of things that people feel because they don't really understand that this is the way it is. Other people have said, you know, it's a curse on the island. It's like, why does an earthquake happen and stop right at the border of the Dominican Republic? Why does it happen? Why do the disasters happen only in that little part? Is it because of the origin of the island, which is certainly that kind of a thing? What is it? What makes this happen? Well, it doesn't happen anywhere else in the world. Hispaniola is, I think, about one of the 10th largest populated islands in the world, which is Hispaniola, by the way, is a combination of the Dominican Republic and Haiti on one island. Why there? Why not everywhere else? How does it touch you when you hear about it? Certainly many people I know have been moved to action. They have called a number of people, like the Doctors Without Borders, like the Red Cross, and a number of other volunteer places or places where you could donate money. But I'd like to hear from you today. I don't know if there is a voice for the people who are listening, 212-209-2900, about this issue. You know, without judgment, without standing on a soapbox and saying what they should do, I wanted to know what you feel about it. We're in the middle of one of the greatest tragedies in our history. We could close our eyes like we do. You remember during 9/11 how easy it was for so many people to not feel anything except be cautious and fear? Remember that frightened response? Remember that turn-off response that so many people had while other people were just terrified? Remember the tsunami that didn't touch us, or what happened in New Orleans that didn't really touch us? Remember the feelings? What's the feelings here, my friends? I'm not saying you should be feeling. I'm saying, what do you feel? And what do you believe about people who can survive this kind of thing? 212-209-2900 is our number. And I'm going to be taking your calls in just a couple of moments. The thing that we most want to be careful for is not to judge, because it's easy to do that. You know, it's very easy to do that. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Michael?
Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Who is this?
Yeah, my name is Trevor.
Hello, Trevor.
I'm from Brooklyn, New York, and of Caribbean descent. And I'm looking at the whole situation, and I'm saying, you know, it's just a human race. You know, I'm not looking at culture. I'm not looking at race. You know, they're in this tragedy, and they just basically need help. You know what I mean? And before we look at politics and we look at, you know, other factors, I think we should tackle this first, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that. Sure, we want to look at the help of it.
Right.
And the help is what we always think we could do. It's the way we have to, you know, we feel like, okay, got to get down there and give a hand.
Right.
Felt the same thing in 9/11, felt the same thing with New Orleans, felt the same thing with the tsunami. Got to get them help. Got to either give them money or get your body down there.
Yeah, do something. Just, you know, twiddle your thumbs and think about what could have been, you know what I mean?
Sure. But now, on the other hand,
right,
how do you get through it? How did you get through the major tragedies of your life?
Honestly, I had the luxury of growing up in Brooklyn, New York, and growing up around different cultures, not just Caribbean, you know, Italians, you know, Irish people, and I kind of learned from everybody. So when things get fuzzy and you know, it seems like, you know, it's murky and it's not going to get better, I do similar to what you said. I kind of turn off in a way and just deal with what's in front of me day by day, step by step.
That's what people do.
You know what I mean? And sometimes I look back, even, you know, I was listening to what you're saying. There was a time I wasn't even speaking to some members of my family, and I kind of kept to myself because I had to figure things out. And I don't even know how I got through it. I look back on those times and say, wow, you know? You know, how did I do it, you know?
How did I get through that?
Yeah.
So many times. I remember once I was on a surgical table and I had a surgery done, and I woke up from the anesthesia.
Right.
I never felt so bad in my life. I just couldn't feel. I mean, the anesthesia had worn off, and I was just, wah! Somebody fixed something inside me, and I couldn't believe it. And I knew I could not. If I could just die at this moment, I would be perfectly happy, because all of the chemicals weren't working. Gotcha. Nothing had kicked in, and it lasted just a short while. But I am amazed when I think back of it. How did I get through that?
I totally see what you're saying. I happen to be a cancer survivor, too. So I've been there, man. I've been there and been sick. And, you know, I talked to God and said, you know, God, if this is my time, I accept it. And again, something's in us. I think we have this innate thing in our body that kicks in when everything else fails.
You think you have this, right? You could feel it. You know it.
Yeah. It's almost like, okay, I know, you know, I'm on my deathbed, you know, but something's just telling you to just get up and, you know, push on, you know?
So this thing is not courage, we know.
Yeah.
It's not courage. I mean, it doesn't take much courage for somebody to just get themselves and say, I don't feel like dying.
You know what it is, too? You have to be. I didn't want to leave my mom. My mom was in her 50s. And at the time, I was engaged, too, so I was thinking about the future of my fiance. And it was really them. I was like, at some days, I was basically fighting for them, because I try to look at, if I was gone, what would they do?
You know, Trevor, that's an interesting thought, because I think that's the way the human mind fetches. I love the way the human mind fetches, you know, like, so we'll be laying there and we'll be near death. And we have a thing, just to give you an example about the human body. Do you know when a person dies, Right. It's not a change of subject. They have seven forms of maggots, worms, okay, that form in your body to bring your body to the soil. Okay. So in other words, that's how nature works. Nature works so much so that you are prepared as you're about to go. It gives you a big shot of good feeling chemicals away on the way out, and then these maggots form, and people and they could carry your body to the soil so that you could become, your body can become fuel for the next thing that's going to grow. That's the nature of the human body. So when we get down there, and when you get near death, or when you get near danger, something goes off in us, a trigger goes off, and it says, I'm going to make you survive, and then it wants you to find the inspiration, and you'll fetch in your brain. Yeah.
You're right.
You fetch. Okay, what will I live for? I've got to live for the children. I got to live for school. I got to live to get my new car. I got to get through this.
Exactly. It has to be. You're right. You're totally right. I totally agree with you. If you look at even elderly couples, when one passes, it doesn't take too long for the other one to pass.
That's right.
They kind of feed up each other's energy, you know?
Well, it makes you wonder what happens. It makes you wonder if you have the will to leave.
Yeah.
If you have the will to fight on, have another will to leave. And I think there is a will to leave if you have the choice.
Right. I think we're connected in more ways than we would ever know.
Yeah. Well, what do you mean? Push that a little bit with me.
Excuse me?
What do you mean we are connected in more ways than
we know? We're connected. What I'm saying, you know, the whole 6 degrees of separation theory.
Sure.
You know? Like, things that I do today could possibly affect maybe somebody I don't even know. You know what I mean? It's like a chain reaction. So, you know, I have a buddy, you know, he's depressed. I take him out. He feels a little better. Then he decides to engage his girlfriend. You know, things are connected. You know what I mean? Maybe if I never, you know, he cuts all his friends off, I didn't go, you know, look for him, he would have stayed depressed. He would have never got engaged, never have that family. You get what I'm saying?
I do get what you're saying.
Yeah. We're all connected. Sometimes we forget that. We think we're Superman.
Do you feel that, too, with people right now? You feel that with the people in Haiti?
Yeah, of course they're connected. When I was watching CNN last night, I noticed like they all would stay in packs together. Yeah, and then if 10 people walk away, another 10 would follow them, and they have no clue where they're going. They're just banding together.
Yeah, and are you connected?
Yeah, they're connected
to them. Are you connected to them as well?
Of course. Like I told you from the beginning of our conversation, I'm of Caribbean descent. You know what I mean? And when I saw it, I just saw any island. I didn't see Haiti. I seen Jamaica. I seen St. Lucia. I seen Trinidad. You know, my father used to work at the embassy, so I had the luxury of going to all these places, you know?
Yeah.
So I just saw an island. It could have been any island, you know what I mean? Just a human instinct in me popped out, like, I got to do something, you know?
Well, thank you very much. And, Trevor, thank you for calling in.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate your program.
Sure.
Take care.
So getting to understand ourselves, getting to understand ourselves in response, getting to understand ourselves with our philosophy of life. Sometimes your very philosophy of life helps you do it. I know Haitian people. They have a positive attitude towards life. They have a very visceral, positive attitude towards life. But it certainly is an island that's been filled with the deepest depression and despair. But there's an attitude. And that attitude kind of shines through some of the worst, but I don't know. I think, my friends, what Trevor says is right. We're all connected. We all have it. Now, if we just behave like we're connected, it'd be a little place to be. We're going to take a short break, and when we get back, we'll be taking more of your phone calls. Be back soon.
Thank you.
That's George Lewis from the Burgundy Street Blues. Something about the feeling of that seems appropriate. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. We're talking today about how people survive disaster. And it's difficult for me to talk about it because emotionally I feel very torn by my heart going there and feeling all of the earthquake, the fire, the loss of bodies and the lack of medical attention. I've always been interested in the medical attention possibilities in Haiti with the limited number of hospitals which have now been leveled. My favorite one, the one that I care about the most, no longer exists. And all of these, now we have a boat offshore. We've sent a ship offshore to give medical attention. But what do you do? Float people in boats with broken limbs and twisted arms and legs? I was reading a story about a man who was fighting. And you see, when you're fighting for survival, your mind makes something up. I got to live for the children. I got to live for this. I got to live for this. I got to make sure, like one man, he was fighting so that he could get the body of his wife, who he knew was dead, but he didn't want her buried in a mass grave. He wanted to bury her himself. So he kept his fight. He said, I must get her body. And this is the kind of thought that people will go into, because your mind is trying to find a trick to give you a reason to keep on going. Some people go into some kind of disaster and they get angry. And out of anger, they wind up surviving. And I'm talking about people who have got losses, like they lose their job. They lose someone they love. They lose their child. They want revenge. They want to get even. They get angry. But that's a trick. Because when you lose something, you don't do it any better by, you know, being angry. What happens is eventually it passes and you get past it. But the trick is to try to activate your system into a more positive, active, now not positive mentally, but positive, just expenditure of energy. So in reality, we have no choice but to keep on going. I'm sorry, my friends, given a tragedy, you cannot quit. You're not allowed to. Your body won't let you. You're just going to crawl up. They put you 6 feet under. You know, and you fall asleep and they think you're dead and you're 6 feet under. You're going to crawl your way to the top of that grave to try to get up there and ring that bell so that, you know, you say, hey, wait a minute, I'm coming through. That's the way the human body and all beings are built. They will fight to survive. Stay alive is the mandate. Why? Because your DNA tells you. We're building into your system one thing that says fight till the death. And when you die, we're going to let you go real quick. We're going to put all kinds of chemicals in you to dissolve your body to get rid of it. Push it away. Serve it as food for another animal. Throw it out to sea. But fight to the death. Get stronger. And now here's the interesting thing about every time you fight. They say what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. It's a funny thing because each thing that doesn't kill you in a way strengthens you in some way by having more knowledge about how to survive. So if you don't know how to survive this time, you know how to survive the next time. How do you get through a bad storm if you haven't been through a bad storm? Well, you have something in you that learns. What doesn't kill you does make you stronger because you've come out of it. And then the interesting thing is the information that you gathered on how to get out of it somewhere becomes part of your unconscious. And somewhere down the line, that gets down to your children and your grandchildren and your great-grandchildren. Your DNA is looking to improve itself. It wants to grow new immunities. You know, it's like we keep hearing about these infections that people get that where they're immune to certain antibiotics. Why is that? Because even the antibiotics, even the germs are trying to fight for survival. A cold fights for survival. A virus gets in your nose and it says, tickle his nose. And if we tickle his nose, he'll sneeze. And if he'll sneeze, it'll send all of us airborne and we'll be able to go into somebody else. Right? maybe him tickle him so he could wipe his hands, so he could blow his nose with his hands or something. You know, he touch his nose, and then he'll go touch somebody else, and then they'll touch themselves. And the virus has found ways to survive. And bacteria are fighting like crazy to survive because we've developed these antibiotics that are going to kill them. And they said, oh, whoa, we're bigger than you. And so now we have antibiotic-resistant bacteria. What do you expect is going to happen? You can't kill anything, because if you do, it's going to come back stronger, mostly. I hope that people come back stronger each time. You grow new immunities. So is fate the answer? One time I was grieving somebody, and I remember a two-line poem I wrote that said, a piece of me went dead. All my tears were shed. It's like when I ran out of tears. I couldn't feel anything anymore. That's the little transition time. I'm not sure. Now, you may have lost loved ones or good friends or an entire way of life, but there is still life in you. Your heart's still pumping. Your body demands you care for it. Throughout history, disasters have proven to be something that people just recover from. So my applaud to everybody, especially when you begin to see how big this family is, and whatever help you can give to reach out to the different agencies that are giving help to Haiti directly, join in. 212-209-2900. 212-209-2900. Let's hear it from more of you. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another one of your calls. Hi, you're on the air.
Is that me?
Yes, it is you.
Yes, I'm Sister Mel, and I'm a long-term listener.
Hi, Sister Mel.
And this is my first-time caller.
Well, I didn't think I recognized your voice before. Where are you a sister?
No, I'm just saying my name is Sister Mel.
Sister Mel?
Uh-huh.
Oh, two words or one word?
Two words.
Oh, okay. Hello, yes. Sister Mel.
Yeah, like most of us, you know, I'm torn about the suffering, you know, and my prayers go out to the Asian people.
Mm-hmm.
But my emotion came this morning while I was listening to the news and all the other countries that are coming to the aid of the people, and, you know, we're getting together like this. And it takes a disaster like this for people to open their eyes. Maybe it's from the Creator that this is happening. But, you know, suffering was there before, and suffering is all over. And you gave a beautiful talk just now about how we should react when something happened. But maybe if we had reacted that way at 9/11, like, you know, be more forgiving and not... But we had revenge, you know. America had revenge, you know. These people shouldn't do this and whatever. But like I said, you know, my emotion is with us loving each other and,
sure,
you know, really seeing the suffering of the world. If we could do that, if we could just do this, then we would have less war, you know, because, you know, it could be...
So what does it take, Sister Mel?
Destruction could come from war, I'm from natural causes, but look at war. That is destruction.
Okay, wait, Sister Mel, before we get further on this, you understand that anything you're saying, we all agree with.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a lesson. We all agree.
Mm-hmm.
The question becomes the following.
Mm-hmm.
Was it necessary, or is it necessary, sometime to create something so big that people pay attention? How many times have we attended to Haiti? We've attended to Haiti so many times, and yet we've gone away doing nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And every country does it. So is this that we have to make it so big, that whatever the forces are, have to make it so big so that we really pay attention? But Haiti is one piece of us. You're right. When do we pay attention to ourselves?
That's my question.
That's the question.
And that's the question.
Yeah, thank you very much. That's a great question. Thank you for calling in.
Oh, you're welcome.
Right. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand.
Hello.
I tuned in a little late in the program, but I had to take the opportunity to call. This is my first time calling.
What's your name?
My name is Crystal.
Hello, Crystal.
Hi. I understand you're discussing the tragedy that happened in Haiti.
I'm discussing how people survive tragedies in general, the mechanisms that would be considered pathological if you did it day to day. For example, if you were going out and you had a party, and then you got angry at somebody and you dissociated, disconnected, you did all these things, it would not be normal. What I'm talking about is that we have defenses in our system that we could utilize in times of tragedy that, where at other times it would be crazy, these are very also productive things that were put in our body as part of our defense against being annihilated. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm talking about.
Okay.
And how about you? Are you a survivor?
A survivor of a tragedy?
Or just a survivor in general. I think you see yourself as a survivor, don't you?
Yes, I do. I didn't watch the news, and I've been avoiding it.
No, but I mean in your personal life, are you a survivor?
Yes, I believe that I have learned to become a survivor, and I'm still learning how to master that.
Well, let me ask you something, Crystal. You know, since... How did you, what was the message that you gave yourself when you felt like quitting? What did you say to yourself?
Well, see, it usually doesn't work out that way. I usually get into a depression and then I get support and something just happens that I come out of it.
So there's an interesting thing that you're teaching us. Depression may be a place that we go to so that we find the support we need. That, in other words, if we're in depression long enough, somebody's going to eventually pay attention. Now, that's very interesting because, you know, we're talking about depressed cultures. We're talking about depressed societies. Mm-hmm. So maybe the idea of the depression is so big that you have to make it so big that people finally pay attention, you know? And maybe that's the object of depression after all. Maybe the object of it is you had to sink so far down till somebody reached out their hand to you in a way that you could feel it.
Yeah, that's not something that I've consciously thought of.
No, I know. I understand.
Yeah, but I think that when you don't know what else to do, that becomes something that you just kind of go into this sadness and just blank out until something reaches out. And
it's amazing that we could blank out. It's amazing that we're able to blank out. You know, when things get bad, it's amazing, because I've seen people who've lost their children go blank. It's amazing that we have this mechanism to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm talking about today is seeing and admiring the human being for all of its vicissitudes, which include blanking out when you shouldn't blank out, and thank God blanking out when you have to.
Yeah.
So what inspired you to call in today of all days, Crystal?
Well, I've tried to call in the past, so once I heard you were taking calls, whatever the topic was, I was going
to
call.
Oh, because you wanted to talk to us and say hello.
Yeah, I really love the program, and I've learned a lot from it through the years.
Well, thank you. How many years have you been listening?
Oh, I don't even know. I'm 27, I guess maybe 10 years.
Long time. Well, we thank you very much for being part of this.
Thank you.
You know, and thank you for calling in, Crystal.
Thank you.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
Bye. 212-209-2900. So Crystal makes a good point about depression being as a possible utilitarian purpose. You know, I've always thought of depression was a good way to rest. You know, when you just can't take anymore, you sink off into a corner and you go to sleep for a while. But here's another perspective. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
First, as always, I'm enjoying your program.
Thank you.
And I was thinking, I was listening to what you were saying and the points you were bringing forward. But I think that religious teachings have a great part to play in teaching people how to understand the way life works, you know. I am, and like this other gentleman, the one at the beginning, who really hasn't gone through too much compared to these, the families and the people in Haiti or in parts of New Orleans. But I do agree with the lady that focused that it's important for you to create value and strength within yourself. And the gentleman was saying we're all connected, and by your becoming a powerful person onto yourself, and because we're all connected, we are able to assist in that way.
What's your name?
My name's Denise.
Denise, so yes. You have found this for yourself. You found your connection to people.
I found it through my religious teacher. I'm a Buddhist.
Uh-huh.
And they speak about cause and effect.
Well, they also talk about pain and suffering.
It depends on what type of teaching you practice.
Oh, I see. So you're not among the we're all meant to suffer teaching of Buddhism.
No.
You're
no.
the other kind. You're
about it's about understanding your power. You were saying that how the psyche grew.
And what kind of Buddhism is that?
I'm a Nichiren Daishonin Buddhist.
Okay, so each one, that's a good thing about Buddhism. You know, they have different types.
Wait, exactly. Wait. Just like different kinds of other Christian religions.
Sure.
Pentecostal and what have you. Everybody has a different feel to it. But when you were speaking about struggle, because I have not had the occasion to groom myself through really urgent struggle, it's important for me to try to groom myself and to understand how growth happens. You were saying that through struggle, you know, it's a great benefit because you have an opportunity to grow. And that, in fact, that's a very important ingredient to growth is struggle. And I was just studying that
Denise, that's a beautiful thing you've just contributed. Yes. You know, I grew up tough way. I grew up in the hard way, so I had a lot of lessons. I struggled my way up, but you're right. For those who did not have those struggles, you know, when I've seen so many people who have just had like a typical middle-class life with, you know, mediocre family values and nothing really bad happening, they didn't train themselves to look at that, and you have. It's part of your learning.
May I interject something there?
Sure.
Because of that, our environment being as such, it is most unfortunate for us. And that's why
right.
what the sister was speaking about before, how important it is for you to understand how life works, you know, the reality of your existence, you know, the causes you make bring forth a certain kind of effect, et cetera, that sort of thing, and understand how we are connected, not only person to person, but with the environment.
Perfect.
So that the kinds of untruths that our society is espousing, no, not our society, certain segments of our society are espousing, we can recognize them to be not truthful and to be able to make some kind of course to correct it. But if you don't take the time to understand why things happen to you, how, you know, to try to approach it one way, if it doesn't work that way, try another way, you really get confused. And this is what I see with particularly the younger the children are, the more confused they're becoming. And unfortunately, we as adults and parents, we're becoming confused, too, because the propagation is so untruthful.
Denise, you're a student of the world. Denise, I appreciate your telephone call. Thank you very much.
It came from my study and my practice.
What did you say?
I should do that.
Yes, good.
You know?
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Such good people we have at BAI. But of course, you know, of course, we would rather not learn from disaster, but some of us have no choice. And right now, there's a whole bunch of people who have no choice but to learn of how to survive a disaster. Whatever mediocre help we could be, it never, never takes place. It never kind of takes the place of the tragedy that a person has to deal with. You can't really give a true remedy. But, you know, we're all connected, like he said. You know, it's every cell in my body is connected to every cell in everybody else's body. I'd like to hear more from you, my friends. We're a little out of time. So I would like to hear from you, WBAI. You could send me an email at armand@thepositivemind.com because I'd like to hear more about what you feel, what your thought is about it. And I appreciate you. So I will be back with you on Tuesday at 1 p.m. with more of The Positive Mind. Bye-bye for now, my friends.
Christopher Father.